Moral and Ethical Implications of Family Planning, 1978. This talk was read to a Planned Parenthood symposium in Portland in March 1978. The quotations, somewhat abridged and manipulated for oral presentation, are from the chapter The Second Apple in Irene Clermont de Castillejo's Knowing Woman, Harper and Row, Colophon Books, 1974, pages 93 and 94. I wondered how the moral implications and the ethical implications in our title actually differed. So I looked in my shorter Oxford dictionary, and it told me ethics, the ethical, is the science of morals, 1602. The science of human duty, including the science of law, 1690, and rules of conduct, 1789. The morals are, quote, of or pertaining to character or disposition, of or pertaining to the distinction between right and wrong, or good and evil, unquote. And that usage is from Middle English. So you see that English morals are 400 or 500 years older than English ethics. Now, when I was trying to think what to say to this meeting, every woman friend I talked to, when I said, what am I going to say? I am in the Planned Parenthood discussion about the ethics of family planning. Every single woman said with indignation, what has it got to do with ethics? I think they were afraid, as I am afraid, that because ethics is a set of rules or rational theories, it will lead us straight into the same old arguments, the same sterile discussions where people say this is right and that is wrong and don't listen to anybody else. Abstractions about right and wrong, whether they are as old as thou shalt not kill or as modern as do your own thing, very often serve only to confuse and weaken genuine moral decision. The dictionary's primary meaning of moral refers to character, to the person. And a moral choice is, I believe, an act performed by one person. It may or may not conform to law. It may or may not coincide with the edicts or advice of a government, a church, or a body of concerned people like us. A moral choice, in its basic terms, appears to be a choice that favors survival, a choice made in favor of life. This arises surely from the biological, but we are not biological beings only, and survival does not necessarily mean the personal physical survival of the individual. Death may be chosen for the sake of moral survival as opposed to moral destruction, or for the sake of what is perceived as spiritual value or the undying soul. Death may be chosen for the sake of the survival of the clan, the nation, the species, or life itself. The survival of our species, and of all higher forms of life on the planet, now depends primarily, and, as I understand it, very urgently, upon the limitation of the human population. It appears that we really have only three options. Strict family planning to reach zero population growth, and then a decline until we get back into ecological balance, or plague and or famine, or World War III. I don't include as an option the scenario of science saving us with miracle soybeans or artificial asteroids to migrate to or anything of that kind, because unfortunately all of that is, as of now, science fiction. So there seem to be only three options. And the trouble with using ethics to tell us which one to choose is it doesn't work. The rules are out of date. They were not made for this situation. We can sit around arguing with the right to life people and trying to get fundamentalists to use their minds and trying to overcome all the huge machinery of antiquated law with arguments and reasons until doomsday, which won't be long in coming. We are in a bind. Our reasons are good, but they are not enough. We need an appropriate morality. We need people who are able to make the choice in favor of life. I think one place we have to look for such people is among women. After all, almost all the rules, laws, codes, and commandments we have, all our ethics, were made by men and for men. Until just a generation or two ago, this was entirely and literally true. Women had no voice, no vote. We let the men make all the choices. There are reasons why we did so. They seemed adequate. They no longer seem adequate. Our survival and our children's survival is on the line. Where man-made ethics differ most radically from female morality, from what women think and feel to be right and wrong, is precisely in this area where we need a new morality, the area in which men and women differ, the area of sexuality, of conception, pregnancy, childbirth, and the responsibility for children. I must admit that, to me personally, most of the rules men have made on these matters seem, if not simply irrelevant, disastrous. And yet we are still pretending that it's a man's world, still letting that myth run us. And it's going to run us right into the ground. I suppose a morality that arises from and includes the feminine will have to be invented as we go along. Rigidity and codification are exactly what we want to get away from, after all. But here, for it's so easy to talk about things like a new morality and so hard to show what one means, here, perhaps, is a suggestion of the kind of thing I and many, many others are groping towards. In her book, Knowing Woman, Irene Clermont de Castillejo writes, "Woman, who is so intimately and profoundly concerned with life, takes death in her stride. For her, to rid herself of an unwanted fetus is as much in accord with nature as for a cat to refuse milk to a weakling kitten. It is man who has evolved principles about the sacredness of life, and women have passionately adopted them as their own. But principles are abstract. Woman's basic instinct is not concerned with the idea of life, but with the fact of life. The ruthlessness of nature, which discards unwanted life, is deeply ingrained in her. You see, she is trying to show how a woman's desire to have children and to love and care for them can be twisted all out of shape by ethical coercion, until it becomes a bondage, a hideous sentimental trap. Here, she offers an example of natural, unperverted feminine morality. I have been struck with the spontaneous reaction of many women and girls to the thalidomide tragedies. So often they exclaim with absolute conviction, of course they should be aborted. It is criminal to make a woman carry a deformed child. And pressed further, they say, it is monstrous that men should decide whether a woman should or should not have her own baby. That is not ethics, but it is morality. If we can get that realistic feminine morality working for us, if we can trust in ourselves, and so let women think and feel that an unwanted child or an oversized family is wrong, not ethically wrong, not against the rules, but morally wrong, all wrong, wrong like a thalidomide birth, wrong like a thalidomide birth, wrong like taking a wrong step that will break your neck. If we can get feminine and human morality out from under the yoke of a dead ethic, then maybe we'll begin to get somewhere on the road that leads to survival. Note, 1988. Castillejo's statements still seem as strong as any I have read on this subject, but they do, in equating woman mother with cat mother, run the risk of implying that women are natural, that their morality is natural or instinctive, and hence lower than that of civilization, i.e. male-dominated society. I have found Carol Gilligan's, in a different voice, Cambridge, Harvard University Press, 1982, one of the most useful guides into the difficult area of the cultural determination and enforcement of differences between male and female moral perception.